From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM, emerging artist for the first couple hours tonight. And later, next hour, no coincidences. Dr. Wayne Dyer joins me, his latest work, I Can See Clearly Now. Looking forward to talking with Wayne again. Here's what's happening. Well, a massive winter storm system packing cold air, snow, freezing rain was just walloping the central United States on Sunday. I'm right in the middle of it. It's 9 degrees outside in St. Louis right now, headed for the East Coast, sending temperatures plummeting and causing major delays for weekend travelers. As a matter of fact, my son and I were driving on a highway today. He's in his four-wheel drive vehicle, and we see a woman spin out on the freeway, smash into an abutment. We were the first ones to get to her. She was okay, and she didn't want any help. I called 911. She said, no, 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 I'm fine, I'm fine. She got back in her car with half the front knocked off and simply drove away. Rainfall, snow associated with the system will stretch over 1,500 miles from southeastern Colorado to southern Massachusetts. It is a real mess. Can't believe it. We're into January 2nd, 3rd already, and we're still getting this. A thunderstorm that brought sorely needed rain to the drought-plagued California is winding down after sending mudslides down foothill communities, flooding roadways, and opening up sinkholes. Evacuation orders remained in effect for hundreds of homes in Los Angeles County, in those communities where recent wildfires have burned away vegetation that holds soil in place. Let's check in with the Earth Changes media expert Mitch Batras about all of this. This is still strange weather, Mitch.
Very strange. And I'm glad your kids are with you. I love hearing the stories with your kids and that they're staying with you right now. I had a very similar incident with my children. I have little ones, a 5- and a 2-year-old.
Yes,
and the 5-year-old was curious because we had never done that before, but we stopped and we helped this person, and she was very interested, and I think they learned from this that you know, we're cautious, but we care about others, and it's a great message.
Well, it sure is. Mitch, you know, when are we going to see a change here? I know in the St. Louis area, only here for a couple more weeks. I've got a speech at one of our affiliates, WPTI, down in the South on Saturday. But when are we going to chop out of this weather? I mean, I noticed it's going to be 50 Friday in St. Louis. Is that the beginning of the end of this bad stuff?
No, I'm afraid not. It's going to be here for a little while. Not too long ago, matter of fact, I think it was specifically December 31st, was the full flip of the sun, the magnetic pole reversal. And ever since that time, we've had an array of solar events, charged particles coming in the way of coronal mass ejections and solar flares. And speaking of your guest, and no coincidence, it just so happens as these events are happening in waves, so is the weather. It's corresponding in harmony. And what I'm noticing most, George, in addition to these waves of weather, is I don't remember the amount of temperature shifts that I'm seeing today. In my location, yesterday was 80 degrees. At 6 p.m., it was 34. And tomorrow, I think it's going to be 70. So that is unusual. And these high winds and all the events that you're speaking of, I think the Earth certainly has seen this before. Some of us may not have experienced quite the same in our lifetimes, depending on how old you are. But I think this is going to be around for a little bit more as the sun, as it goes into its solar minimum, tends to escalate its solar activity.
Well, as old punks at Tawny Phil said, the groundhog, it's coming, and we're going to have 6 more weeks of bad winter. And so we probably have at least 2 more weeks of that then. Well, you know, we've been talking about bitcoins for a long time on Coast to Coast. It's that digital currency. And I got to tell you, the story here that I'm going to tell you in a second really tells me that going to digital currency, even if we do away with the dollar and that kind of currency, the digital currency is pretty dangerous. Mt. Gox, once the dominant exchange for Bitcoin trading, said that more than $470 million of the virtual currency simply vanished from its digital coffers, kicking into high gear a search for the missing money by victims and cyber hacks. Acting alone and in groups, the people stepped up their efforts after Mt. Gox filed for bankruptcy protection in Japan, and they confirmed rumors that it had lost 750,000 of its customers' bitcoins, as well as 100,000 of their own. Hackers just went in and took them. I mean, so digital currency is not the way to go. A day after men armed with long knives stormed a railway station in southwest China, killing dozens of people, wounding more than 100, authorities describe what happened as a premeditated terrorist attack in China. Police shot dead at least four of the hackers, who numbered more than 10, and were looking for the others. Still tense in the Ukraine, of course. Ukraine's new leaders accused neighbor Russia of declaring war as Kiev mobilized troops and called up military reservists in a rapidly escalating crisis that has raised fears of a conflict. Amid signs of Russian military intervention in Ukraine's Crimean Peninsula, Russian generals have led their troops to three bases in the region on Sunday, demanding that Ukrainian forces surrender, hand over their weapons. Now, as you know, President Barack Obama told the Russians, hey, I'm warning you, don't do this. But, of course, Vladimir Putin, the Russian president, simply sent his military in. Let's check in with Jerome Corsi. And, Jerry, the first thing I have to ask you, of course, is this. We're in Iraq. We're in Afghanistan. So how can we dictate to Russia what to do?
Well, George, we can't. Truth is, with the sequester and also the Obama administration budget, the military in the United States has been reduced dramatically. We're headed toward the size of a military comparable to what we had prior to World War II, and Putin knows U.S. military strength is dramatically weakened. I'm not sure to begin with it would be a good idea to intervene in a conflict like the Ukraine. We did not intervene in the 50s when then the Soviet Union was in Hungary or Czechoslovakia, but we couldn't intervene even if we wanted to, which is one of the main geopolitic realities that I think Putin is aware of.
There's no question about it. I mean, there's just no more strength for us to do this anymore, and I don't think we're going to go to Russia over the Ukraine, are we?
No, I don't think it's going to happen. Also, the other part of the problem with Ukraine is that it's another one of these countries that's in dramatic fiscal crisis. I mean, there's like a $15 billion shortfall. The International Monetary Fund or Russia through a loan or someone is going to have to provide Ukraine. There's no way the Ukraine could launch a military effort to defend itself against Russia. And essentially, the Ukraine is right now just at the hands of Putin, and President Obama is going to have to sit in the sidelines and watch it go by. His threats are going to be as idle there as they were, the red line against Iran. Iran is now advancing to make nuclear weapons, or the red line against Syria, which, again, President Obama was not able to intervene or to carry through with any military measures. We're really incapacitated at this point in additional military measures that the United States could take, even if we wanted to.
Watch China watch this and how it unfolds, because they could do something to Taiwan or some other region.
Well, and China, you know, the China and Russia are both remilitarizing and are having a generation of military development beyond what the United States has. And people should realize that Russia has always had ambitions in the Western Hemisphere and has had a warship in Cuba, which had it been the 1960s and Jack Kennedy in office, would have been a major U.S. national crisis, but is getting very little attention right now, even though I think it's a serious geopolitical event to have Russia begin military adventures in the Western Hemisphere.
Jerry, update us on what you've been doing and what's new with you.
Oh, well, George, I've been working very hard. I mean, I just finished a drafting and the final editing on a new book on the Battle of Bastogne. It's the 75th anniversary of World War II, that battle that will be published by Thomas Nelson in November. It'll be about a 350-page book, and I just did the final editing on it this weekend.
Great. Good for you, Jerry. Thanks, and thanks always for your input into so many stories that are going on this planet. In Houston, a fisherman who suffered a seemingly minor scrape during a Sunday outing on Lake Conroe has died from an infection of flesh-eating bacteria. I mean, the guy goes out there to fish, cuts his hand a little bit, and now he's dead. 74 years old, retired postal worker, former firefighter from the southeast Texas town of Chester. He's dead only 5 days after this fishing trip with his four brothers. Unbelievable. And living under a flight path for more than 20 years can raise the risk of heart disease and stroke due to the disruptive effects of nighttime noise, according to a new study. For every 10 decibels of aircraft noise that you are exposed to out there on the average night, the risk of developing either of these conditions increases by 25%, heart disease and stroke, if you live under a flight path. Regular nightmares in childhood may be a warning sign of early psychotic disorders, according to the researchers in the United Kingdom. The study in the journal Sleep said most people and most children had nightmares, but persistent ones might be a sign of something more serious. In California, a California appeals court has decided that some cell phone use while driving is legal. You know, right now you cannot talk on the phone or text, obviously, when you're driving. You shouldn't really do that anyway. But according to a court, the appeals court, they said that a guy's name was Stephen Springs of Fresno. He had argued that, hey, I didn't deserve a $165 fine. I wasn't violating anything. I was using my phone not for communication, but I was using it as a GPS map. And the court agreed. So we'll see what happens there. Stephen Bassett, of course, is the executive director of the Paradigm Research Group. He has worked for years to bring us disclosure in the UFO field. But he's pretty scared right now, and he's pretty upset. He's going to tell you why in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Stephen Bassett, of course, as I mentioned, is the executive director of the Paradigm Research Group, which is a leading advocate for ending the government-imposed truth embargo regarding extraterrestrial presence in the human race. He's also a political activist. I had the pleasure twice over the last month to give Steve achievement awards, one at the Conscious Life Expo in Los Angeles for his work in the field, and also at the UFO Congress in Scottsdale, Arizona. Two awards, Stephen, that you deservedly got, and let me tell you, you've been working hard for that.
Thank you, George. I appreciate that.
Now, you're not too happy right now. You're kind of a little concerned about some episodes that have been going on. Explain that.
Yes, indeed. I'm afraid we have some serious matters to discuss this evening. First, I need to provide some context to your listeners.
Okay.
I've been dealing with the issue of ETs and the ET reality and the national security structures now for 18 years. And I can say now with full confidence, and I think all of my most trusted colleagues agree, that there's no question in my mind that over the last 67 years, the United States government has murdered American, innocent American citizens on American soil in service to various national security objectives. I'm also quite certain that they have threatened to kill American citizens or the families of citizens, again, in service to these national security matters. In a range of issues, I suspect, but certainly in the ET issue as well. The last time that I think this kind of activity took place with respect to the ET matter was between 1994 and 1999. And the reasons for this was that was virtually the birth of the disclosure advocacy movement. In a rapid succession, a number of things were happening, which I think drew great concern from the managers of the truth embargo. Rockefeller Initiative began in March of 93 that went on to 96. Stephen Schiff began investigating Roswell in 1995 and 1996. In late 1996, Art Bell decided to give a platform to the advocates of disclosure on his show, and suddenly there was an audience of millions to hear what we believed was going on. Then in January of 97, Corso published his book The Day After Roswell, the same year as the 50th anniversary of Roswell, which attracted a great deal of attention. And that's not all that was going on. We don't have time to cover it all. But I believe that that really seriously concerned the truth embargo managers, and they started to take and do very, very nasty things. Without getting into the details of that, there was one thing that happened during that period which I think represents what I'm talking about, and that is the death of Congressman Stephen Schiff on March 25, 1998, 3 years after he began to investigate the Roswell issue. after being briefed by Carl Flock in 92 and 93. Stephen Schiff was a war veteran, a Republican, a man of high integrity, a good guy. And he was digging into the Roswell issue. He was going to the GAO. He was going to the Air Force. He was not getting a response he wanted. He was getting the runaround. He got angry. He went public. He went on a number of television shows. He displayed his discouragement and anger about this. And in 1998, 3 years after he approached the GAO, Stephen Schiff came down with a squamous cancer, a squamous cell skin cancer, which is typically not fatal, but a very unusually aggressive one behind his ear, which they could do nothing about. It went directly into his brain, and he died on March the 25th, 1998. A single death. Be clear, a single death of anybody proves nothing. But the circumstances surrounding Schiff's death at the time was so disturbing to me that I believed even at then it was at least a 50% chance that Schiff was murdered, to send a message to everyone in Congress, don't go there. And this is 1998. However, by the end of 1999, I believe these activities ended. And I was watching very carefully. And so going forward from 2000, we had many witnesses come forward. We had the witness press conference by Stephen Greer on May 9th, 2001 at the National Press Club. We had a number of those since. None of these witnesses have reported being harassed or threatened. There's been no unusual events, to my knowledge, and researchers as well. It was as if the managers of the Truth Embargo basically said, circa 2000 and what's going on, we're not going to do that. We're going to let the chips fall where they may. And that was good, and I was pleased. But I've always kept my attention out there, just in case. Now, you know that about a year and a half ago, I announced that the citizen hearing on disclosure was going to take place, that we had a substantial opportunity here to possibly end this truth embargo that began with the White House statement of October 4th, 2011, claiming that there was no evidence whatsoever. And I believe that we may be able to get the truth embargo over by this year. A lot of people also agreed the citizen hearing on disclosure was extremely successful and generated a powerful response. I knew that if, in fact, that was true, which I believed it was, if there were still truth embargo managers within the government resolved that the end of the truth embargo was not going to happen, they might make a move. And I was watching. Unfortunately, I think they have. And here's why.
As it's not a good move, is it?
No. On December the 30th, 2012, noted researcher Philip Coppens, who would investigated the ET issue in a number of ways, particularly notable for his work on the ET component of ancient history. He was very prominent on the Ancient Alien series, which is, very successful series.
And he was young.
He was 41. He died of an angiosarcoma, rare, highly aggressive. He was dead in a few weeks. Died on December 30th, at the age of 41. I noted that. It was tragedy. It was unfortunate. We move on.
We move on, and now we have two cases. We've got Schiff. We've got this one. Still can't tie it together yet. Go ahead.
7 months later, my good friend and researcher, Lloyd Pye, was diagnosed with a highly aggressive B-cell carcinoma of the abdomen. Lloyd, 66. Not young, but a very healthy 66, tremendous shape, no smoking, no drinking, no drugs, just a healthy guy. And he was diagnosed, like almost all of us, he had no health insurance, so he was able to raise some money from supporters, I think $25,000. He was able to go to London. He went to a research center in Germany. He got some advanced treatment, and he was able to shrink that tumor, which is the size of a softball, down to less than the size of an olive. Unfortunately, the treatment did have to run its course. He went home. And within a few weeks, it exploded back to the size of a softball. And he died of complications of that tumor on December the 9th, 2013, which, oddly enough, was my birthday. Lloyd Pye's death hit me pretty hard, George. It was just very difficult to take that one. And, of course, I thought about Coppens, and I was concerned, but certainly not going to come forward because there's a serious problem here. For someone like myself to come forward about these kinds of things, it's going to clearly raise concerns, fear, even paranoia amongst contactees, researchers, witnesses, potential witnesses. And to do that, when in fact what lies behind the concern is in fact not there. It's just there's nothing there.
Hold it right there, Steve. We're going to take this break. I want to come back with you and talk more about this because there are still others who have died. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Steve Bassett with us. So after Lloyd Pye passed away, Steve, and that was extremely tragic for all of us. I just love that guy. There were more. It didn't stop. What happened?
Yeah, more happened. But I neglected to mention that Lloyd, of course, was a researcher, author, lecturer, and for many years has been pursuing the DNA analysis of an anomalous skull called the Star Child, which he thought may well might be a hybrid entity of some kind. And that, of course, what he's best known for. Okay, well and good.
Okay.
So, not enough to act on, but only about 10 days later, after Lloyd Pye passed, I received word of the death of another individual by the name of James Allen. James Allen is not well known to the overall community. He's off the East Coast. He was a very talented artist and aspiring filmmaker. He had been working for some time with Mark McCandlish on a documentary about alien reproduction vehicles. He actually did an initial documentary as part of his thesis, graduating from film school. Then he expanded that into a full documentary. And also there was a consideration that there might be a book as well. Now, Richard Dolan had worked and talked a lot with James Allen, so he knew him. I did not. And Richard told me that he was a very talented, very smart guy. I've had lengthy discussions with Mark McCandlish, which is where I learned of his death. Alien reproduction vehicles is a double hit on the truth embargo. First of all, it points directly to the ET issue. It also points to the matter of ET technology sequestered behind the truth embargo. It's serious stuff, and he was going directly at it. The documentary was eventually finished. If anyone goes to your Coast to Coast website and clicks on the link there for me, it will take them to the PRG site where they will find a link to this little-known, little-seen documentary called Zero Point, featuring Mark McCandlish and the Fluxliner. He died of a very aggressive liver bile duct cancer. In fact, the physician said they'd never seen anything like it. He was gone in weeks. He died in early December. This definitely got my concern. And at this point, I contacted some of my colleagues to get some feedback because, again, I'm starting to wonder, should I go public? But I don't want to go public if it's not an issue, if this is simply not abnormal and create fear. However, two things happened since then that finally convinced me to come on your show this evening. 7 days, well, Lloyd Pye and Philip Coppens died. I do not believe, pretty sure there was no autopsy. However, before James Allen died, he assigned power of attorney to a close friend of his, also known to Mark McCandlish. That individual demanded an autopsy. 7 days ago, the toxicology report from that autopsy came back. It was passed on to me by Mark McCandlish. If your listeners, again, go to your website, Coast to Coast, click on the link for me, go over to the PRG site, they will see a link to that toxicology report. And what that toxicology report shows, and it's been run by several physicians who have confirmed, James Allen was poisoned to death by a sophisticated mix of toxic metals, including, most importantly, thorium and uranium at 10 times what is considered even a high level. He also had high levels of lithium, beryllium, aluminum, again, beyond high levels, manganese, copper, zinc, selenium, cadmium, barium, and platinum. It's notable that two of the most common metals found to be at high levels in Americans living in this industrialized country are lead and mercury. Both of those for James Allen were low.
Jeez.
It appears that James Allen was murdered. If I were a member, and I'm not, of the Pye family or the Coppens family, I would seriously consider having their beloved one autopsied.
Checked out.
And a full toxicology report done on them. However, just before I got this report, something else happened out there.
My gosh, Steve, doesn't it end?
Not yet. And what this is getting more complicated, but I have to include this because I know how good the disinformation people are inside government. I know how good they are when they're pursuing national security. They have the absolute best people. 1 year ago, the Loveland authorities executed a warrant on the home of contactee Stan Romanek on suspicion of child pornography based on a tip, and I put this in quotes and caps, to Homeland Security. His computers were taken.
That's a bizarre story. I know my colleague George Knapp is questioning, why would you tip Homeland Security?
Don't know.
On some kind of a trumped-up charge like that?
They sat on those computers for 11 months. And just 2 weeks ago, 5 weeks before I'm ready to go back to Washington to launch the Congressional Hearing Initiative, they finally execute the arrest warrant, charging Stan Romanek with the possession of child pornography. I do not believe it's distribution, though there's mixed reports on the Internet, of at least 20 images or more on computers that they've had in their possession for 11 months. Now, based upon what I have been able to see so far, what I have read, this case stinks to high heaven. So.
And he's married. His wife is baffled by this,
too. He is married. His wife is. Now, it's possible that there's no connection here. It's possible that he is quite guilty, but I have to tell you, I'm deeply suspicious. So you have a contactee. You have a filmmaker dealing directly with the alien reproduction vehicle issue, an ET issue, in a documentary. You have a researcher dealing in anomalous DNA. And then you have a researcher dealing in the alien ET, ancient ET connections. Three dead, one an attempt to destroy the reputation, all within the span of 12 months. Now, let me be clear, and I've always known this. If the government wants to kill you, you're dead, period. I think most people know that. You know that. There is nothing you can do. If the government wants to destroy your reputation, they can do it. There's nothing really that you individually can do. We all are on the Internet. We all have computers. I can assure you that what happened to Stan could happen to, if I believe it is a setup, can happen to anybody. You have McAfee. You have antivirus, Norton antivirus. I assure you they can cut through that like a chainsaw. And they can load anything on their computer you want. So what is our protection if my suspicions are true? There's only one thing. You have to go public. You have to shine a light on it. And hope that people will pay attention, that the media would pay attention, and most importantly, those working within the military intelligence community, both in covert and above black projects. Because the truth is, there are plenty of people working in our national security structures who want the truth to come out, that are on our side. I mean, they certainly can't unilaterally do it, but they actually support the advocacy movement that we're doing. It's hoped that they, upon learning about what I think is going on here, may find a way to prevent or stop one or more entities. And it only takes one in a highly compartmentalized security structure like we have. The other ones might not even know what's going on to stop doing this. And I entreat them directly. Don't do this. It's a mistake. We are not your enemies. It's only going to damage the country and you, and nothing good will come from it. And the truth embargo will end anyway. And so I felt it was time after the toxicology report came back and, of course, the Romanek situation. I'm going, okay, I have to go public here. I invite all of our listeners to pay attention to this, to Google these people, Pi, Allen, Coppins. Pay attention to the Romanek case. Let PRG know if there are any other deaths or any other things going on that could point towards what we'll call executive action on the part of one or more entities within our government to thwart the truth embargo at just movement, just a point when we're about to take it to the United States Congress to get hearings. And let me also point out, George, that while I know this may frighten some contactees, researchers, witnesses, I also know that the vast majority of all the witnesses that we have dealt with that are ready to go before Congress immediately and testify under oath will do so even if they get a personal call from the agency threatening their life. Mm-hmm. They will do it anyway.
Are you concerned about your own safety, Stephen?
I'm not concerned about my safety. I know the game. I accepted it from the beginning. Anybody that deals in advocacy at this level, that is a possibility. I don't care. It doesn't bother me. I do want to put something on the record, though, just to have it on the record. And that's this, that In November of 2012, and going on for 4 months to March of 2013, I suffered 5 attacks, which I believe were gallbladder attacks. They were brutal, incapacitating. The third one put me in an emergency room. I came back to California for a while. I had some testing. I don't have much insurance. All I've got is Medicare, which is increasingly worth less than a bucket of spit. But I did have some ultrasounds. I had some blood work, and it was determined it wasn't gallbladder, but it was likely liver. I had bad numbers. About a month later, those numbers returned to normal. And in the last 11 months, while I haven't exactly been feeling great, I've had no further attacks.
Good. Good.
I didn't even think about it. But when I learned about Alan's death, the fact that it was a highly aggressive liver bile duct cancer, I thought about that. That's it. If the opportunity presents, I get some funds, I'll try to get more advanced testing to try to get an idea of what happened and check to see if there's any of the problems.
I would love to know what's going on. I want to tell you, by the way, full disclosure, several years ago when Stan Romanek went public about the little alien picture looking through a window of his house, he submitted himself to a lie detector test that we paid for, and the polygraph examiner said he failed the test. Now, in Stan's defense, he did say that he was under heavy medication during the test, and subsequently I've been told that could affect the results, except that's what happened, and I wanted you to know that, Steve.
Yes, but to me that is not actually relevant, and I'll tell you why. The people inside government are extremely smart. They know what they're doing. They've been at it a long time. If they tried to pin a child pornography charge on me or, say, Richard Dolan, I think they know that it wasn't going to go very far, that people just weren't going to buy it. And so they pick a contactee. Remember, the government believes there's no ETs at all. So these contactees are all nuts, aren't they? Yeah. They're making it all up. And so what are they doing? They're trying to discredit contactees in general. They're not going to do this randomly. They know what they're doing. Also, they could kill any of the leaders of the disclosure movement anytime they want. But, you know, that's kind of – it's high profile. It could generate some blowback. So you kill some – I guess you could say some of the ones just working in the trenches to send a message to the others, like possibly they did with Stephen Schiff. Back off. You know, cool.
Well, I got to tell you, it is bizarre – that you begin to get so many cases like this with people in the field who then die of very similar circumstances.
Aggressive, untreatable
cancers.
And, of course, let me be clear. Look, the toxicology report is at paradigmresearchgroup.org. You can link to it from Coast to Coast AM. I invite any doctor listening to us tonight, to go and look at that toxicology report and email you, and tell us what they think. Is that indicative of a poisoning? And if it is, I can assure you that is a very sophisticated poisoning. This is not something that, you know, your brother-in-law who never liked you can pull off.
No. Nor can you get it.
This is extremely disturbing. Now, I believe this is not over, George. There's more coming. I think there's going to be a lot of response to this. I want to make it clear that Mark McCandless has made it clear to me that he is happy to come back and talk about this further on a later show together. More information about James Allen, his life, what he was doing. But Allen particularly bothers me because while Pye and Coppins might have been a message to us that, you know, why don't you guys back off, Allen was directly confronting the truth embargo through that documentary. He was not a devotee. He was new to this field, but he was very smart. And so if he was murdered, he was murdered because he was a direct threat. Well, he's not the only direct threat to the truth embargo. And so if they're going down that road, there's a very long list of people that could be next. And all I can say is if you work in the government and you know what's going on, stop this from happening. It is a colossal mistake. It will only hurt the United States, the American people, and, of course, the victims.
Well, right? Let's not forget a couple other cases, Stephen. Michael Hastings, who was on our program a few months before he died in a Mercedes car accident that blew up and caught fire, he was ready to make some heavy disclosures, not in the field of ufology, but still, he was going to, you know, blow the whistle on some interesting government work he was working on.
Of course. I'm paying attention to all of that. Now, obviously, these things are outside the ET field. I'm mostly concerned about things relevant to the ET field, all right? But I do watch these other – what the government's doing. And the government's doing a lot of bad stuff. And so when the Romanek case comes across my desk. I couldn't help but think of Julian Assange, who, as you know, is in the Ecuadorian embassy right now in London because of a trumped-up sex charge put together by the United States and its very tight ally, Sweden, that almost everybody that looks at it knows is nonsense. And so, look, we are seeing, because of the actions of Assange, because of Snowden, Manning, Anonymous, and, of course, the ET disclosure movement and other movements, we're starting to see the first signs that the truth, the secret empire, this unprecedented, vast complex of covert and classified people, organizations, laboratories, underground facilities, is starting to be threatened by public concern.
They are unraveling.
Clearly, they're going to fight back, and the question is, how far will they go?
Let's take a few quick calls with the time we have left, Stephen. Patrick in the state of Washington, west of the Rockies. Patrick, go ahead. You're on with Stephen Bassett.
Hey, Stephen.
Yes, Patrick.
How you doing?
Hanging in.
All right. Well, now, how do you explain any of this as far as, like, you know, Snowden? He is absolutely a traitor.
No, he's not. He's a hero.
A hero to who?
When the NSA is illegally spying on you, how could you call a guy a traitor?
A traitor with, he's, let's see what Vladimir Putin is doing in Russia right now.
Well, you don't know. You're guessing. You're saying that
no,
Putin's
I'm not
beating
guessing.
The heck out of him. Sure you are. Sure you are.
George, let me comment.
All right, and we've got a minute or so left. Go ahead.
Yeah, whether you think he's a traitor or whether he's a hero, the point I'm making is whatever he is, what he's doing and what these other people are doing are posing a significant threat to this vast national security complex. And that's a fact. And so there can be – we can expect possibly – and are seeing a response. And there's going to be it's going to be a tough go, and there's going to be some casualties. And I guess history will sort out who was right, who was wrong, who was good, who was bad. But I'm just pointing out the obvious.
Stephen, any time, in my opinion, that a government worker discloses illegal government activity, he is not a traitor.
Well, it certainly, you know, as a longtime advocate, George, what Snowden did was considered civil disobedience. And the rules, unspoken rules of civil disobedience is that you do it. You do it for the right, because it's the right thing to do, but you take,
the punishment.
Right. However, I must say that in the case of Snowden and what was involved there, and again, the way whistleblowers are being treated and other things, the punishment is supposed to be appropriate. The government's dealings have to be also balanced, and it's not balanced and not appropriate. And so, in a sense, the government's breaking the unspoken rules there. Right. In other words, if you go and you go to the South to march against civil rights and you sit down or you're arrested, you may have to pay a fine. But if they take you somewhere and beat the crap out of you, that's no good. And so if it's going to be unbalanced, then you have to understand that some people are going to commit civil disobedience, but they're not going to then turn themselves in for, quote, the appropriate punishment.
Well,
this
and
is
if
just a sign that things are out of control.
And let me tell you, if Snowden was releasing reports on where our satellites were and what they were doing and where our submarines were, that's being a traitor. That's not what he did. Here's our next emerging artist. And Stephen, thank you.